kind of like you have a doctor in the operating room and he's a super, super expert and went to medical school and did 1,000 operations. And what we do is we kind of provide him with a special x-ray that helps find things that sometimes are very, very difficult to find to the human eye.
This is the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast, showcasing outstanding startups and initiatives in the global sports tech ecosystem. From Sports Tech X, the leading source for data and insights about sports tech, here is your host, Roan Malhotra.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast. We're keeping our themes, which I've really enjoyed doing, I must say. We've done various themes until now. We've covered sports tech in the Middle East. We've covered a month of speaking to some really great funds and sports tech fan experiences. And this month, all for the month of June, we've got AI in sports under the spotlight, a topic that has been spoken about maybe too much, maybe not enough. Depends on which side of the spectrum you're sitting on, critically, positively, all thoughts aside. A lot of it has been focused on generative AI, but I wanted to throw a wider light on it and cover all the possibilities that AI presents in sports. We've got a great lineup for you. And one such company that has been on this in the spotlight for a while is a company called Zone 7. They use AI to help with injury prevention for most likely your favorite sports team. These guys get around, it seems. I've got the CEO from Zone 7, Tal Brown, on the show. Welcome to the show, Tal.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much, Ron. It's a pleasure to be here. And I look forward to the conversation.
Super. A little background. So, Tal, you're Israeli, currently living in California. I'm Indian, currently living in Berlin. We've covered like some nice geographies there. Anywhere else you've lived in the world?
Yeah, actually, I actually grew up with traveling parents, and so I spent time in Africa, spent time in Asia as well. I actually got my degree in the UK, so I've been around, but settling here in California for the last few years with a company has been a phenomenal experience. Just you know, as a founder who wants to learn and grow, and you know, build a team and partner with a super, I don't know, experienced people in growing a company, it's a good place to go through this journey.
Yeah, no doubt. I've actually been fortunate enough to spend, I think my first few travels, like work travels, were across Africa. I spent time in South Africa and Rwanda and Swaziland. Yeah, great place to be as a young man. But no, we won't talk about me. Nobody's interested in that. We're interested in you. Before we get to the company, I'm always curious about the man or the woman behind the story. Sure. Or behind the idea. So a little background. Where did you come from? You've already spoken about where you lived a bit. But what took you to starting Zone 7? Like what is the genesis of that?
Yeah, so I mean, background, I would say you could call me a third culture kid. So growing up in multiple cultures, multiple languages, I ended up spending a few years working in the homeland security, cybersecurity space as a young software engineer, working on, I think back then we would say big data projects, cybersecurity projects. I'm an engineer by training, so I was a coder and I was dealing with big data systems. And then my journey for the next decade was really in tech. I was working in enterprise software, you know, putting together products, selling them. My last job before starting the company was with Salesforce. I was probably one of the first AI-focused product management guys asked to build an AI platform way, way, way back. I'm talking probably a decade ago. And I've always been, you know, on this, you know, place where machine learning connects with human workflow. And the emphasis would be on the human workflow. Like, you know, I was never one of those guys who works on machine learning projects that just, you know, create numbers and, you know, you run a ticketing system off it or you determine prices off it. I was always connecting data with the human workflow. And that was my background. And so I did that for 5 years at Salesforce. And then left to start this company. So joining the company or starting the company, founding it, was kind of like bringing with me a lot of, I would say, domain knowledge around machine learning and how it can help human operators. But it was a fresh start for me in the sports ecosystem. And so it was a wonderful journey of learning. Not always easy, but certainly challenging and fulfilling.
So my big question here is, obviously, I mean, before Salesforce, a quick look at your LinkedIn profile will tell anyone, but you were at Oracle before that, so you've spent time in big tech.
Yes.
What made you make the jump into sports, and why specifically injury prevention? How is that the theme that you caught?
So, you know, when you change careers almost, then there's multiple factors. There was a very strong personal factor where I felt like I wanted to lead my own company. I wanted to just be a founder and you know, I would say have that experience. And, you know, it's true that it would have been more accessible to me to go and do something in enterprise software or in, you know, in big tech. But I also had a strong urge to do something that I connected with emotionally and would have some positive impact on, you know, some community of people. As it happens, my co-founder was a sports scientist or is a sports scientist. And we connected and I kind of like really, really like this idea of, can we, naively thinking, can we help reduce human downtime, right? And all the bad things that happen from it. I mean, sure, you want to do it for athletes and who get paid a lot of money, but you also, you know, our aspiring plans is to do it for a much larger community. And so that really triggered it. It was a combination of, you know, personal career choices, the desire to do something that has a positive impact. And also, you know, the relationship I built with my co-founder. You cannot underestimate how important that that chemistry and that bond drives you. And that was that's the kind of guy I am, right? I'm a bond kind of guy. And so there was no initial plan to go into sports. I'm a sports fan, but I'm not a sports fanatic. And I just fell in love with the idea and with my co-founder and with the journey. And I got sucked into it, and you know, here we are. So I think it was it's a good case of karma, doing something good for change on a personal level.
Fantastic. Okay, so it was the relationship with your co-founder, a little love affair, which took you into sports, which is a fantastic thing. Sports is a place of love, man. I certainly believe so. All right, so then let's jump right in into Zone 7. And you talked about, maybe we'll talk about the injury prevention angle specifically, because, again, a quick look at your guys' case studies page presents some really good names, obviously, that you've worked with, whether it's Liverpool, whether it's working with the Rangers, Queen's Park Rangers. I mean, I'm sure there are bigger names here. And there are some names that are masked, you say a Champions League club or a La Liga club, where you can't disclose names. So you've, I guess, found, and I think it was the Liverpool case study that I came across, because I think there was a lot of PR that either you guys did or they did, I don't know where it came from, around your, how you prevented downtime or kept players active for Liverpool. Is it now that like everybody is chasing you for your services rather than the other way around? Because that is the most important thing for sports, right? When these guys pay millions and millions of dollars and euros to these sportsmen, athletes, they need them on the pitch. You help them do that.
Yeah, I think first off, I think it's important to say like we did not prevent downtime. It's not up to us. We, you know, it's kind of like you have a doctor in the operating room and he's a super, super expert and went to medical school and did 1,000 operations. And what we do is we kind of provide him with a special x-ray that helps find things that sometimes are very, very difficult to find to the human eye. So you can use a doctor metaphor. You can use a pilot metaphor. We're not the pilot. We're not flying the plane. We're not doing the surgery. We provide insight into things that are sometimes, you know, I want to say invisible, but very difficult to see with other tools. And we use AI to do that. And, you know, the case studies are interesting because very early on, we realized that we're going to be in the sports industry. But more importantly, within the sports industry, we will be operating or selling to or partnering with scientists, right? Team physicians and sports scientists and people who deal with numbers. They need to see, let's say, evidence in the format of what would resemble scientific evidence, right? Ultimately, you always want to have a peer-reviewed paper published in a big academic journal, but they need to see data and they need to consume it as they would consume any other knowledge that a scientist would like to see. And so we decided early on to be quiet for a few years. I don't like to saying stealth, but I, you know, we were quiet. And then when we felt we have enough case studies, we started to put them out there in a very transparent way. So it's not just a slide with numbers. It's like a 10, 15-page write-up with how we do it, why it worked, where did it fail, right? Where were the injury rates not high and why and all that stuff. So the journey of creating case studies for us has been really interesting. And we feel that, you know, sometimes it goes well and people respond well to it. And sometimes it's still like, hey, I still, you know, somebody on a team could say, look, I'm a scientist. I've been studying this for many years. It's not enough for me. I need to see it in my own environment. I need to test this with my own hands. And, you know, that happens sometimes with big teams like Liverpool and sometimes with smaller teams. It just depends on the scientist. And, you know, if I'd be a scientist and this new thing would come on and say, oh, we can do this, we can do that, we can use predictive technology, I would also be skeptical. So it's totally natural. So the case studies reflect a very, very careful journey to create, and I would say, data or evidence that, you know, points to value that we can create. And, you know, when the stars align, then the impact is there. But ultimately, the impact is because the human operator has been able to, you know, include us in their process and include this thing called AI into their very well considered expert process.
Staying on that, talking about this human operator that you're dealing with, what has been the change in, let's say, your sales cycle of how you're talking to these operators over the last? Like, has there been a tipping point, or do you feel that it's still to come? Like, over the last, what point did you stop after explaining what you were, let's say, the core genesis of what it is going to do, and just focus on, hey, this is something that you need. Now we can just get to commercials and see whether the math makes sense. Or has
I think three things. There's three types of, I would say, it's not a binary tipping point, but there are three vectors that are driving our growth. One vector is that, you know, 5 years ago when we started the company, every team had what we would say movement monitoring, like a GPS vest that measures running and jumping and all that. Everybody had it, but that's all they had. So we were like a tool on top of that. Today, almost every sports team has multiple sensors. They measure game data, they measure training data, they measure gym strength, flexibility, sleep. So naturally, the challenge of unpacking, analyzing all of that is bigger. So that's working kind of like towards, oh, if we are spending so much money on collecting data, maybe we also could use some help analyzing it. So that's one track. The other track that's working here is AI is no longer, AI is no longer like this weird, dangerous black box thing that people in other industries do, right? Football or basketball, everybody uses data and analytics in scouting. A lot of them use it in tactical analysis of opponents. And so there's more familiarity with needing to or wanting to run a data project or a data process on one of our verticals. And I think the medical side is coming in now. Like it's been behind on scouting for obvious reasons. It's easier to spend money on analytics when you're paying somebody, you know, millions and millions of dollars. But it's also happening in the medical department. And I think the third vector that's working for us is more about us. We have adjusted our sales workflow, but actually, yeah, as well, but our narrative. So we're using predictive technology, but we're not predicting injury. People hear predicting injury and they think this thing is going to tell us which minute on the game will happen a tackle and what that tackle is going to create. It's not a magical, you know, Harry Potter prediction. It's a scientific forecast that signifies elevated risk for a specific period of time. And the human operator can use that, right? They're not going to be able to use, don't put this guy on the field today, but they can use something like, there's high risk for the next few days. If you maybe modify how you prepare for a game in 3 days, there's a chance you might be able to reduce the risk and, you know, an overall over time, over a larger sample, be able to drive availability to where you want it to be. So those three things are influencing how we're changing and how the market's changing in the favor of companies that that do similar projects. And I can also say it was really, really hard. It's still hard, but it was really, really hard a few years ago. You know, it was hard to get attention. It was hard to get trust. Every one of those case studies reflects not just work we did, but also somebody with vision and faith in us and said, hey, let's, you know, I think the industry is going to change. Let me take a bet on a young company. And, you know, those case studies reflect these wonderful partnerships.
I remember being at a talk by Roberto Martinez, the I don't know if he's still the head coach of the Belgium football team, or no, he's Portuguese switched. Yeah, I remember him giving a talk. This is a couple of years ago at one of those sports tech conferences, and he was talking about, like, somebody from the audience asked him, well, what is the one piece of innovation that you wish you had right now? And he basically described, like, I wish there was like a capsule or some sort of room or a door or a window or whatever, so that a player could walk through and I could just tell how they're doing. Like, how match ready are they? Like, what muscle is the hamstring tight? Is this ankle good? This and that. And I remember thinking then, I remember thinking of you guys and a couple of other, like, this whole injury prevention, monitoring, management, red zone, amber zone, green zone kind of thing is so, so critical. And now, as you said, I can imagine it was maybe difficult a few years ago, but surely now everybody just gets it, that this is mission critical to get, make sure that people are healthy. Like, you see the NBA playoffs and how teams fluctuate so wildly between when Kawhi is injured versus Paul George, like, whatever, without getting into the teams. But the fortunes of the team depend so wildly. So surely it's getting easier for you guys to make that pitch and do it so well.
Stay up to date with all things sports tech and sign up for our newsletter. You'll get a monthly breakdown of the most important developments in the global sports tech ecosystem, paired with exclusive interviews with industry leaders. Get all of this and more delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up today at sportstechx.com.
Let's talk about the success studies, the success cases that you've had, and which are the ones, maybe apart from Liverpool, that you really feel like, hey, we made a difference there.
Yeah, so we can certainly discuss that. I think for us, for like the way we like to measure our success internally is with two types of metrics. Metric number one is, are we accurate in being able to forecast a risk scenario? And essentially, we use standard statistical methods, right? Over a season, there may be, you know, let's say a bunch of injuries, let's say 50 injuries for a football team, for a soccer team. Sometimes it's 20, sometimes it's 70, but let's just pick 50. And when you analyze a season of data, sometimes, usually we do that in retrospect. So we kind of say, hey, give us access to data from last year and let's analyze it in retrospect. So we create an algorithm for that client, and we tune it, and then we show them results. Retrospective, of course, but we show them results. Hey, out of those 50 cases, here are all the cases that we would have been able to provide you with, call it a risk flag or a risk alert, a forecast, essentially, that would have been correct, right? So an injury was preceded by a flag that said there's high risk. And for that to be successful, that flag needs to be timely. Like, it can't be a month ahead, and it needs to be a couple of days ahead. So we analyze that and we provide information, and there's a set of metrics around the accuracy of the forecast. How many of those 50 were you able to flag is one important metric, what we call sensitivity. But the other one is, were you flagging every player every day? Because if you were, then, you know, you probably would have flagged every injury, but it's unusable. Like, nobody's going to use a system that introduces so much what we call noise. So you need to have a good amount of accuracy, which, you know, we can call specificity, which is essentially how good are you at not, you know, making noise. And usually we reflect that as the number of flags per day, right? If you're a coach, if you're Martinez and 17 of your players are flagged a day, it's unusable. If two are flagged a day or three or one, then it's usable. You don't have to do a lot of changes, but you can focus where you need to change. So that's one set of metrics. And across the board, we typically have something like 70% detection rate in a football environment. Basketball, similar. American football, rugby is a little bit lower because there's more contact. The other type of metric we track is over time, over a season or half a season, was there a change to the downtime? So call it availability if you like. And you need some time for that. You can't do it on a weekly basis. You need for enough incidents to have been accumulated. And we like to track that as well. And so some of the case studies talk about, you know, 40% reduction in either the volume of injuries or the volume of days lost.
40% is a big number.
It's a big number, but it's not entirely up to us. There's a human operator, and that operator needs to trust the flag, right? And it also needs to have the ability and the motivation to introduce a change. And that's the key thing here. A change could be, let me talk to the player. Let me see how he's feeling. Maybe he's going to tell me something and it's going to be pain or it's going to be discomfort. Then there is maybe diagnostics. Oh, if a flag was correlated with bad pain, let's scan the leg, let's do an ultrasound, whatever. Then you could look at some corrective work in the gym, right? If the flag is indicating a hamstring risk, maybe we do some specific hamstring related drills or strength exercises. And then another way to impact is to say, and this is where the term load management comes in. We provide a flag, but we also say, look, it's 2 days before a game. Typically, 2 days before a game, you guys do, I don't know, speed work. This player should actually do a little bit less of sprints or maybe a little bit more of something else. Sometimes you're at risk because you're not enough workload, right. And sometimes you're too much. And so the human operator needs to go through that process and they need to, you know, apply their own discretion and expertise and hopefully create some change in the environment. And so when all those pieces come together, you end up looking at case studies that have these impacts. It's not always 40%. It could be 10%. It could be 15%. QPR, for example, Queen's Park Rangers. It was a team that when we came in already had a very low injury rate. And you know, even improving that by 10% is a huge win. And then also sometimes it's football and it's sports and things fluctuate and there's a lot of variables we don't control, right? Zone 7 is not like autopilot. People don't just follow it blindly. And so things can fluctuate, but it's about the process and the workflow. Are we helping people analyze the information in a more repeatable, objective way? I think we are. And are we able to accelerate their workflow, right? The alternative is to look at 10, 15 charts on a computer per player per day.
Right.
And then have a discussion about what's the right amount of change in sprinting and jumping and whatever. So that process can be accelerated with the tools and the insights that we provide.
Trust the process, control the controllables. And then the most important one, what you ended on, is like actually focus on insights. Like what are the things that the data is telling you rather than just giving you reams and reams of data. Quickly, before we move on, I want to have you touch on one important aspect there, which is the player themselves, the athlete themselves, because you're basically science-backed, talking to a science-backed individual, say the doctor, the physio, whatever. But this whole conversation is about the player. How receptive have you seen players be to your kind of tool? Like, I mean, you'll have on one end of the spectrum, you'll have players who are, no, I'm always fine, and they build a rock like a Haaland or a Bruno Fernandes who always want to play 90 minutes. But they might be in different zones versus somebody else who's maybe, hey, we can push you out in the field. You're not as bad as you say that you are. Like how receptive have players been to this kind of data and this kind of technology?
Yeah. So the honest truth is, I don't know, because Zone 7 is kind of like an insight generating algorithm, right? Call it, I don't want to call it ChatGPT, but like a diagnostics helper or a modification helper that is in the hands of the coach and the doctor and the trainer. What they do with it is up to them.
But what do you hear from them? I mean, indirect feedback at least.
Indirectly, I think that, again, depending on the culture of the club, and this is an uncontrollable, it's not uncommon for the staff to go to a player and say, look, you know, we want you to be 100% for Saturday and it's Wednesday. Let's make a few tweaks today and tomorrow and see where we are. I don't think that's landing badly. I also don't think that a club would say to a player, hey, you're not playing tomorrow because the app told us. It's not going to work. So we've taken this approach of we can provide information to the club, to the staff. They decide with it and they incorporate that into their expertise. Other tools in the consumer or individual fitness space actually just, you know, deal with the athlete, right? If you're a runner, you're using Training Peaks, you get information to you directly. But for us, it was a different journey. So we are a tool at the hands of the pilot. We're not really dealing with the passenger.
As you said, you're trusting the pilot. You're just giving them the right tools and then they will carry the information forward. Speaking of going forward, what next, Tal? Where do you guys head? Like, what's coming up in 23 and 24 and beyond?
Yeah, great question. I think for us in the football soccer space, we have, so it was our first market. We're not done, but we're in this kind of scaling state, right? More teams. We've got new clients in new territories, MLS, Mexico, more countries in Europe. One case study I'm really proud of is Napoli, who just won the Scudetto. And they were somewhat of a skeptic early. Earlier on, they were a skeptic, and you know, we were able to contribute to a very healthy and transparent learning process. So it's about scaling in football and soccer, as every startup wants to scale, but it's also about adding more verticals, quote unquote. And so we have early clients in NFL. We have early clients in the basketball environment. So that process is going to happen and is happening already. And we're also working in military environments as well. Think about the military athlete who it's very expensive to train and very expensive to lose when they have an injury. And not all injuries can be prevented in that space, just like sports, but big numbers, right? You know, if you can reduce downtime, if you can help guys reach later stages of their military journey in a better state, then that's a worthy goal. So for us, it's about those projects in 2023.
Coming full circle. You came from some sort of military background and now you're serving the military as well.
Yeah. And I would say another thing that we're seeing is that governing bodies in sports, leagues and federations are also starting to work with us across more sports than I mentioned here. I mean,
actually, that was going to be on that. Like, how many sports are you catering to now before you complete your answer?
Probably four. We're very selective in going into a new sport. We need the commercials to work, but we also need data, right?
Right.
We really want to do things like, I don't want to talk bad about tennis. I will love the sport, but like it's more of a decentralized data environment. Rugby has a lot of data. Basketball has a lot of data. Football. So we kind of focus more on team sports for now, where data about the player, the game, the schedule, medical data, it's all available at scale. And so governing bodies are starting to work with us, and which is great because they also are beginning to or already deploying an agenda around player health and player availability. When the best players aren't playing, like the example you mentioned in the NBA, then, you know, you're not only losing revenue in a way, but you're also, you know, you're a work environment that creates, you know, non-ideal safety. And so player safety and health is a huge, huge trend now for a lot of governing bodies.
Yeah, I think one of the companies that we were working with last year as SportsTechX actually got picked up by NBA's Launchpad. They had a whole accelerator program or a startup challenge, call it, which was just focused on ankle health or solutions that focused on player ankles because obviously...
It's a German company, right?
Yeah, Better Guards, yeah. And we were the ones like, hey, there's this program running. Why don't you go apply? Because this is as good. Like, if you're not going to get in there, like, then I think we should all just go back home. But that's the kind of stuff, like, as you said, leagues taking this topic, the NFL, of course, famously about head injury and concussion, like they take their case studies, very seriously. Make sure more players are on the pitch, the biggest names are on the field for most of the time, but also as a league, you're seen as taking the topic seriously. So I get that case completely as well. All right, Tal, I think we've motored through and I'm trying to be conscious of time as well. We're doing super well. So I'm going to bring my last question home, which is my favorite one to ask. I like to believe that we're all sports fans first. So I'd like to end on what has been your favorite sporting moment, either one that you watched as a fan or maybe participated in as an athlete as well.
My favorite sporting moment. So when I was 6 years old, I was, as a kid, I watched Maradona Argentina and Maradona win the World Cup. I was a kid. I was watching it on one of those old TVs. It was color, but it was very granular. I remember it very clearly. And it was an insane summer. I remembered watching those games, the Hand of God goal, the finals. So I think for me as a kid, that was a really powerful moment. I'm also a huge Kobe Bryant fan. So I got up early for a lot of his games, but that's following his career for me has been very emotional. And before, and I would also say this, one of the most powerful sporting experiences for me was San Antonio Spurs winning that championship in 2014. I watched the entire playoffs for 2 years straight, and I was almost with tears. And my daughter was just born, so it was a very emotional moment. So there you go. I gave you three good answers.
Was that the Heat? Yeah.
Yeah, they lost to the Heat 2013, you know, yeah. Game 7, Game 6, insane drama. And then they won like in five games in 20.
Yeah, Ray Allen with the Game 6, and then they lost the Game 7.
Right, and 2014 was like a redemption. And it was just, for me as a fan, it was, you know, I was getting up at 3 a.m. to watch every playoff game. And it was just wonderful. So thanks for bringing those happy memories.
Okay, quick, it'll be remiss of me as an NBA fan to let you go without a prediction. How are we doing? Heat, Nuggets? What do you feel?
My heart is with the Heat, but by half a point. Just because I like the coach, and I like Jimmy Butler. But you cannot not like the Denver Nuggets. So this is, for me, it's not a case of good versus bad. It's like two very teams I really respect, and I like the underdog making it all the way through. I really like that.
Incredible story. Yeah, I'm the same. Heat fan. Jimmy Buckets has been amazing this playoffs. But to see these names come into the finals. Also, there was so much, like, not hate, but like knocks against like the finalists from the bubble edition of the NBA. And it was the same Final Four. Slightly different finalists, but incredible to see that good teams will survive. Tal, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us. And if anybody wants to reach out to you, what's the best place to find you? LinkedIn, your email?
Or either LinkedIn or super easy, tal@zone7.ai.
tal@zone7.ai. There you go. All right. If you want to reach out, if you're a club who's looking to reduce your injury downtime, or you just want to know more about AI-based injury management, then I think Tal's your guy. Thanks, Tal, for joining.
All right.
That is a wrap for this episode. We're going to keep this series going. I've already had a couple of great conversations. We have more lined up for you. AI in sports, such an interesting topic. See you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast with Rohan Malhotra. If you like our show, let us know and leave a review. And if you want to know more about us, check out sportstechx.com, where you can find our latest industry reports and updates. For a deeper dive into all things sports tech, check out our comprehensive database, SportsTechDB, at sportstechdb.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find us at SportsTechX on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Join us next time for another insightful conversation with a leader in sports tech.